Well, hello everyone for Tuesday, March 4th, 2014. This is the Consumerization Nation podcast. I'm Jack Madden, and with me as always is Colin Steele.
Good afternoon, Jack. How's it going?
Pretty good. So we have a lot of exciting stuff to talk about with Mobile World Congress. I'll just note that today I am broadcasting live from my kitchen counter, and Justin Meisinger is streaming the show to the internet live from his home office, not in the San Francisco office. And Colin, tell us where you are today.
Not to be undone, I am in the normal podcast studio that we have here in our office outside of Boston. However, our PC has apparently died, and the Mac that we have does not play nice with Skype and our mixing software. So I am actually talking to you on Skype on my iPhone 4 over a 3G connection.
Wow, there we go.
So this is quite the cobbled together podcast, but we'll make it work.
Against all odds. And, you know, this one is so exciting because, frankly, Mobile World Congress was a big, exciting mess of news and all sorts of fun. I was there all last week. Unfortunately, Colin, I did not get to see you there.
No, I was not there, and I think maybe this would be a good story to start off with. I was supposed to go and cover the enterprise IT angle and ran into some travel difficulties. I was supposed to fly from Boston to New York to Barcelona, and my flight from Boston to New York got delayed, resulting in me missing a connection to Barcelona from New York. And then several attempts to rebook me on other flights were either futile or got delayed in their own right and would have left me stranded somewhere in Europe. So after several very frustrating hours of running all over the JFK airport and lots of booking and canceling reservations on my phone and communicating with people, that way I made the decision to call off the trip before I turned into a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles character. So I followed the event from afar, but did not get to go.
Yikes. Wow. I should mention, I almost didn't make my connection either. And Justin was coming home and he just barely made his connection to, so we could have been really, we're going by the seat of our pants here. Now, I should mention, so this was my first time at Mobile World Congress, and you know, especially for like the BrianMadden.com audience, and you know, like Mobile World Congress is nothing that we ever really covered before. Until you know, always the word on the streets, you know, I don't know what people told you, Colin, but always it was like, hey, it's just a carrier show. They'll have hardware, but mostly it's going to be stuff like, you know, equipment for your 4G networking so that you can provide your subscribers with do all sorts of crazy things that carriers do. And, indeed there was a lot of that there. But there sure were a lot of EMM vendors there. And last year, in 2013, we saw that it started to become an EMM show when we first got the first Samsung Knox announcements and realized, hey, this is something that we should pay attention to.
Yes, and you know, even though there's more of an EMM presence at the event, there's less EMM vendors to present there because of all the acquisitions that have gone on in the market over the past couple of years.
Yeah. Well, so where do we start? So I'm looking at this list of EMM announcements and it has like close to 15 things on it from the show. And these are in somewhat alphabetical, somewhat chronological, somewhat order of importance. So, you know, a lot of stuff came out last week. So I guess we just dive in. And I think officially the first announcement that we got, was the good acquiring Boxtone announcement that came out on Sunday.
Correct. Yeah, they beat the rush of announcements on Monday and Tuesday by announcing that Good Technology had acquired Boxtone. This one wasn't as surprising as some of the other ones we've covered because Boxtone and Good have been pretty close partners for a while, and I think even Good had been selling Boxtone's products for a couple of years now. So this one seems to make sense.
Yeah, it seems like with this, you know, especially since, of course, we should mention that, you know, since the last time that we've had a show, obviously, you know, the FiberLink was acquired by IBM. You know, VMware acquired AirWatch, probably the biggest news. But with this round of acquisitions, EMM, it's really becoming, you know, a big vendor thing. And we can talk about this more in a little bit. But this Good and AirWatch, I mean, or the Good Boxtone acquisition, you know, Boxtone, Colin, tell me your experience with them. But for me, it was always, you know, they did mobile device management, of course, but it was a lot more on the, they did a lot more stuff on like the back end systems management.
Right. They do more of the service provider stuff. So they'll do like, you know, TCO calculators and helping companies kind of get a grip on their mobile strategies, how they're going to pay for it and, you know, execute on it in terms of like purchasing and things like that. So there is that end user stuff that you talked about, but it's also a lot of more technologies and offerings that are targeted towards the business and showing the business value of mobility, which makes a lot of sense. You know, a lot of these companies who are buying mobility, it's something that they feel like they have to do because BYOD is kind of forcing them into it. But, you know, I don't think a lot of them, because of that pressure, they don't have the time to step back and take a big picture view on, you know, how are we going to pay for this? What's the best approach to going at it and, you know, coming up with the right agreements with our carriers and or our device manufacturers or whoever we decide to do business with. So something like that will help. And I'd imagine that, you know, somewhere down the line, that's something that more companies are either going to start providing through their services arms or buying other service provider companies, service management provider companies like Boxtone to do that. And the other interesting part of this that I wanted to note from Good's perspective is we had done a lot of talking about who's going to buy Good and Mobile Iron. Those are probably the two biggest, you know, standalone, quote unquote, EMM vendors left in the market. And I had talked to Good the week before MWC, and I believe the term that they used was, you know, we've always been a fairly acquisitive company, and that kind of, you know, in hindsight was an acknowledgement that we got this big acquisition coming out next week. So maybe Good isn't going to be bought and maybe they're going to try to firm up their own stable of vendors and products and go after the big guys.
Yeah. You know, and it seems to me that, yeah, just like as all of the other vendors are moving into being parts of, you know, much larger companies that will have like, you know, obviously they're much broader offerings of like the background services. And, you know, while on the front end, you know, like this probably, you know, probably Good, you know, like the, you know, what you experience with what Good is offering, you know, especially what the end user comes into contact, you know, this probably won't change this much, but sort of like beefing up the back end of services and everything that goes behind that to sort of play better in the space of much larger EMM vendors. Does that feel right to you?
Yeah. And one of the other, you know, larger EMM vendors who just became an EMM vendor last week was CA. And they didn't do it by, you know, immediate acquisition like a company like VMware did by buying AirWatch. CA just kind of announced that they're coming out with their own EMM product, which is part of a whole new mobility suite that they're working on. So there's another big software vendor, you know, traditional enterprise management vendor who's getting into the game as well.
Yeah. And a couple things about that, you know, it's interesting that like last year and, you know, especially in 2012, we had that, you know, every time you turn around, another vendor is offering mobile device management, except it'd be, you know, like mobile device management, probably on a much smaller scale. But this is like, this is CA coming out with like a much more baked, a much more complete, like full big EMM product. And, you know, since they play to, you know, huge enterprise scale, it's like we turn around and like, here's another huge enterprise software vendoring with their, you know, broad EMM offering. It's interesting, you know, that how the landscape has changed so much in the last 2 years that, you know, we'd be covering MDM vendors and mobile app management vendors that people would go like, who's that company? And now right. Look at this, we're covering Dell.
All of the big four systems management vendors all do mobility now, which now that CA is in the game. So, you know, just kind of show you just how mainstream it's gone. CA, IBM with their acquisition of FiberLink, as you alluded to before. Microsoft has their Windows Intune based EMM solution that they've been pumping up the past few months. And even BMC has their MyIT platform that we've written about on search consumerization, which is more of like a self-service portal, enterprise app store type of thing, but still plays into the whole trend of those big traditional vendors getting into the mobility game.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because a couple of those, like Microsoft in particular, while you know, like the Intune and, you know, connected to, you know, to System Center Configuration Manager is, you know, the in on the mobile device management side, you know, is certainly ramping up. Like they're, well, of course, you know, like with Microsoft, like we have the big discussion about, you know, how they're, you know, doing certain things, certain ways to protect their, you know, hardware and, you know, client business. And it just, like, while it is ramping up, it just doesn't feel like it's all there yet to be considered, you know, like a full EMM vendor. There's still just too many parts missing, I think.
Right, but I think most of the vendors that we're talking about have some part or parts that are missing. There's always going to be room to keep adding. There's just so much that goes into mobility and so many disparate parts that are being placed together that you're right, but I don't think it's a problem that's exclusive to Microsoft.
Yeah. So going down the list of announcements, also earlier in the show, Nokia announced its Android phone. And I guess the question is for us following the EMM space in particular, like, is this news or is it not news?
From the EMM perspective, I don't think it's news. I don't even know if it signals anything about what Microsoft's long-term plans are for Windows Phone, because as I understand it, this Nokia Android phone is something that was in the works long before Microsoft officially or even unofficially owned Nokia. So it could have just been a Nokia thing that they were exploring before Microsoft came in. So I'd be reluctant to even say something like, oh, well, it shows that Microsoft is, you know, more open to cross-platform devices and things like that.
Yeah.
It might not be the case at all.
Especially we can even say that, like, the fact that it's Android, since, of course, like, this is not, you know, we're talking about like the phones for more, you know, like the lower segments of the market that are, you know, replacing phones that, you know, in the past may have been feature phones. And, you know, this Android will be tied heavily to the Microsoft ecosystem instead of tied, you know, to the Google ecosystem, like most, you know, top level Android smartphones. And so, like, they say, like, their strategy is get people hooked into the Microsoft ecosystem, and then, like, they graduate on to onto Windows phones. So I guess that is a good strategy. I mean, like, but that's, you know, such a long-term thing, and it could take long to filter through.
It's nothing that's going to pay immediate dividends anytime soon. And I really, you know, like you said, they're kind of targeting people who didn't even own smartphones before. So I think if you're kind of like the hardcore business user who's bringing your own device to work,
it's not going to be one of these.
You're not going to be bringing one of these in anyway. So our IT audience really doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Although maybe, but like by the time, you know, these groups of users like graduate into, you know, Windows Phone, you know, whatever, you know, by that time, Windows Phone 9 or whatever, hopefully there will be a lot more apps by then for them to use.
Right. I mean, that's
or according to other rumors, maybe the Windows phones, you know, they'll be able to dual boot and run Android apps to, you know, help make up for the lack of Windows Phone apps. But that, like, I haven't really seen.
Worked out BlackBerry.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't, you know, haven't really seen too many other people other than the super hardcore Microsoft fans that, that, you know, think that will be, you know, a good idea at all.
No, I haven't either.
So, I mean, it'll be cool, from, you know, a, they can do that. So that's interesting perspective. But otherwise, right.
Right. And there's a lot of things like that at Mobile World Congress, things that were just kind of cool and novel from a technology perspective, but probably have no real world application.
Yeah, yeah. I should mention it. So this show, okay, so next year, like next year, we all got to book direct flights or something so that we can, you know, all be sure and get there. So I was, this show is like, like they said, close to 80,000 people. It's in, you know, in Barcelona, kind of near, if anybody's been there, near where all of the like Olympic Park stuff was. But for being 80,000 people, it was the most incredibly well-run show that I've ever been to. It was easy to get around. I was just super impressed. Not to mention, I spent like every single day, all 4 days of the show, hours and hours on the show floor, and every single hour was high quality meetings and conversations. And I left with there being, you know, tons of stuff that I still wanted to, that I still wanted to see. So, so next year, we have our work cut out for us. So
how was Wi-Fi?
Oh, that was not good. I should also mention that, in the process of, on my way there, I was attempted to, you know, update my iPhone to iOS 7.0.6 while in the airport lounge in Brussels, and that update failed. And the next thing I know, I'm seeing like the completely reset welcome screen on my iPhone. So uh-oh. I was able to restore my phone from my iTunes backup. But it turns out you're not allowed to reactivate a phone while roaming. So I was without data and voice connectivity while I was there, except for Wi-Fi. So, oops.
I was going to be without voice and data anyways, because my phone is Verizon and wouldn't work over there anyway. So it seems like you got by okay.
Yeah, yeah. The press room Wi-Fi was very nice, though, we should mention.
Nice.
So next on the list of, you know, big parts of the show, Samsung was there in a huge way, obviously. I had a chance to go over to the Samsung Galaxy S5 event because, you know, even though that's not normally my thing, I figured why not? And so, you know, it was cool to go to this. There was like probably 3,000 people in a separate venue that was offsite, and like a live orchestra playing, and, you know, their big commercials full of people showing how, you know, great a phone can make their life and all that stuff. But, you know, okay. So like it comes in gold, It's waterproof. You know, it's another new phone. It's faster, prettier, whatever. So that was fun though. But obviously the exciting part came for us with the announcement of Samsung Knox 2.0 and Knox Enterprise Mobility Management.
Yes, add another big company to the list of EMM vendors on the market, as Samsung has been building management and security features into their phones for a while, but now they're actually going to be providing the management service itself with Knox EMM, which, as I understand it, is going to be a cloud-based service that not only manages Samsung Knox devices, but other Android devices as well as iOS. There's still a lot of questions about how exactly this is going to work. They describe the Android strategy pretty well with the kind of dual persona-like feature where certain apps can only open in the business persona, and IT can control how far data gets out of that container. They obviously can't do the same thing on iOS, and from what I was covering from afar, nobody was really sure how they were going to do that. Did you pick up any additional information about that in Barcelona?
Yeah, so here's what happened. And this, I actually, the first Samsung event was on Monday night. And here's, I feel like, I don't know if I can actually, technically call this a scoop or something. But I was in the Samsung booth on Tuesday afternoon, and I see this sign for Samsung EMM. And it was, like they hadn't officially announced it there. And, I was talking to, a bunch of guys there in the booth, and they're like, yeah, it's Samsung. Like, we do mobile device management for iOS and everything. And like, I tweeted it with like, Knox EMM manages iOS and everything. And I don't know if that counts as like an awesome scoop. I'm just going to go ahead and, think that it does and believe that.
I'm with you. I got it.
But so there are a couple of parts of this announcement. First, Knox 2.0, because like before, Samsung Knox, just like any other Android management extensions, they would open up the management extensions to to other third party mobile device management providers to manage, and that's still going to be the case. But the big change with Knox is that, well, in the past, it took advantage of the fact that it's built on, the security enhancement for Android, and some of the ARM Trust Zone features on those devices. But what they finally started, but what we had been figuring out, and what they finally like fully admitted, is that a lot of what Knox did, like for the dual persona stuff, was really just app level stuff. And so the apps, you had to send them to Samsung to be wrapped, which means that, it's not just a matter of plunking apps into the container. It's, there were a few hoops to jump through. And that means that's, opened it up to some other, security vulnerabilities, as, we saw over the, late December and January. So that was Knox 1.0 that was announced a year ago at Mobile World Congress. And with Knox 2.0, the underlying architecture has gone to having multiple Android user spaces. And the thing is, now here, this is where I'm, reaching, the depths of my technical knowledge. But what it is in Android, there are, several different ways floating around out there now that you can have multiple user spaces sharing a single kernel. So which one exactly they're using, the Android itself provides some, but there's also, Linux containers that is what Cellrox is using for its dual persona Android. And so there are several various things floating around in there, but the one thing that's for certain is that that the underlying architecture has gone from being basically an app wrapping thing to being, you know, full, complete new Android user spaces. So I kind of think this is a pretty big deal.
I like the way that it's presented, which is, you know, one of the things that we always complained about in the early days of dual persona is that you literally have to switch from the personal persona to the business persona if you want to check your corporate email or something like that. But the way that it looked like Knox is doing it from the pictures I saw, and the way that some other vendors already do it now is all the apps are displayed on your screens like normal, whether they're personal or business. But there's like a little icon on the app that denotes that it's business, and the if you click on that app, it will basically, you know, port you into the business persona, but you're not actually manually flipping between the two personas yourself. So it's a little more user-friendly too.
Yeah. You know, I agree. And I think now that there are a bunch of these dual persona Android solutions out there, because, you know, I talked to the guys at Cellrox there, and there was another new one called Graphite Software that they were showing off essentially the same thing as well. Redbend was there, and they're working on their stuff, and they actually do it a little bit differently. They have like a real Type 1 hypervisor that they use. But I think like the key for these devices is whoever figures out, like, you know, I don't want to see two home screens. I want it to be like essentially, you know, seamless windows like we have in the Windows desktop world, where it's just a bunch of icons and, you know, which Android environment is going into the back end. Like, I don't care. I just want all my icons to be there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the user shouldn't have to worry about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's like the new Knox devices. And of course, you know, we said that like as before, the APIs to manage that, they're open to, you know, all the other MDM vendors, and, you know, a bunch of them made their announcements, you know, that they'll be supporting Knox 2.0, of course. But on the other end, so Samsung creating its own MDM server product. So this means that since they're making a product on a server end, that now they have that vertical integration between device and server that basically has been absent in the enterprise mobility management world, you know, like with the exception of BlackBerry, of course. So I guess, like, what do you think? Like, that seems like a pretty big deal to me.
Yes, and you know, like BlackBerry and also Microsoft, they're now a device manufacturer, getting into the management game, which is a problem or a topic that we talk about a lot in other areas of enterprise IT. Do you want the same company that makes your hardware and software monitoring that hardware and software for, you know, security flaws and making sure that it's running properly, or would you rather have that third party provider who's coming in and looking at it with a new perspective and, you know, a fresh set of eyes?
Right. And the thing is, so here it is. You know, I think I saw you tweet a quote from Brian Katz about Samsung EMM. What was that like?
Oh, if it was the one from the story that I wrote, it was something about how, you know, Samsung makes great devices, but I don't know if anybody's going to buy EMM from them.
Yeah. So the question is, like, obviously all of these, you know, a lot of these specialty Android solutions, they're going after, you know, they're obviously going after the BlackBerry market. And the question is, like, it doesn't even matter the technical specifications, but it's the question is how are they going to convince, you know, some, you know, the people of these, you know, very high security industries and companies, what do they have to do to convince them that, you know, like that Knox is an appropriate replacement? And, you know, like I said, it doesn't matter what the technology is. They just have to like convince them that it feels right and that it's something that they should do.
Right, and this is something that we talked about in my story on search consumerization as well, but Samsung has a higher bar to meet than, say, like a vendor like BlackBerry or Microsoft, even though those two vendors are device manufacturers who are also, or OS makers who are also making management software. They have been in the management game a long time. And this is something that I believe I talked with Brian about during my reporting for the story. And Samsung does not have that history at all. They've been, you know, just a hardware maker. And
yeah, it's like, we'll take your SSDs and your phone and your touch screens.
Right. Yeah. But they've never done any management software on, you know, in any type of enterprise setting before, not just mobility. Whereas, you know, Microsoft does it from, you know, everything from the server down to the endpoint, and BlackBerry kind of invented the whole EMM market.
Right.
Samsung doesn't have any of that history to fall back on.
And well, so the other thing about Samsung EMM is that, you know, at least for right now, so I should mention, I put in the chat room window, you know, a link to the video of the demo that I got. And of course, there's some cool stuff going on in there, you know, that they'll be able to do, you know, with the Knox EMM and Knox devices that might not be available to other EMM vendors. But that Knox EMM platform, you know, for right now is, they said, you know, aimed mostly at the SMB market. And, you know, it does manage other Android devices, and it manages iOS with configuration profiles. But we're talking MDM only. And so all of the other things that you need to have a complete enterprise mobility management, you know, whatever, like all the other apps, all the other file syncing you're doing, like, you're not going to get that from Knox EMM. And also, if you're a company that, if you're in a big high security game that you really want to be taking advantage of all these Knox EMM features, then you've probably you know, been using something else already, and it's probably way more complex and way more, you know, customizable and, you know, enterprise-ish. I'm making air quotes, you can't see them, than, you know, like than the pretty much free Knox, you know, EMM that you can get with Samsung. So in that case, I'm saying, like, kind of like, I'm not 100% sure who's going to use this.
Right. And they also don't have that, you know, built-in user base on the management side. You know, even if you are using Knox already, Knox, not Knox EMM, but just Knox on the device, you know, you probably already have it tied into some other EMM provider. So what's the incentive for you to dump them and go all Samsung, as opposed to like BlackBerry, which, you know, say all the negative things you want about them, there are still businesses who are running older versions of BlackBerry Enterprise Server or Service, as it's known now. So that, you know, when they announce something like Bez 12, which they did at MWC, they still do have that existing customer base to draw upon. So it's slightly easier for them than it would be for a company like Samsung, which is starting from pretty much ground zero.
Yeah. So Bez 12, that's one I, you know, I didn't hear anything about that before the show. And I think it was like one of your tweets when I first heard about that. So two questions, why'd they skip Bez 11? And second, give me the rundown of what you know about it.
The Bez 11 question is going to be one of life's greatest mysteries. It's not
2012.
It's going to be right up there with Stonehenge. I don't know if they like hired a Microsoft executive was in charge of product naming to come up with that or not. But
I guess we're also missing BlackBerry 8 and 9 and Bez 6 through 9. So
right.
That'd be a great game to play. Like, I just thought of like some trivia questions, like, name this feature that came out with Bez 8.
Like, maybe there was 11 or you know, the other numbers that never made it out of Waterloo.
Or like, going to put out an RFP and say, you know, yeah like currently piloting Bez 8, looking at Bez 9, want to check out, you know, AirWatch and Mobile Iron as well to go with it.
Yeah. So I didn't, I have the Bez 12 story on search consumerization up in front of me, which I did not write. So, you know, pretty much everything I'm going to say in terms of facts from the announcement are stolen from our colleague, Jake O'Donnell. But basically...
Oh, we should also mention that so Jake is, well, I guess it's been like 3 or 4 months now, but he's the new Jim Furbish because...
Yep.
Jim moved on, and so now we have Jake O'Donnell that's getting in the space. So anyway, I digress. So Bez 12.
Yeah, so Jake's story about Bez 12, you know, talks about one of the things that they're having in there is they're adding an app dev platform that's being added to it. So it's not just for device management, but it's also about you know, porting enterprise apps over to your BlackBerry, either legacy apps or traditional or mobile applications from other platforms. One of the ones he mentioned was Windows Phone. So, you know, one of the things that's plaguing BlackBerry on the consumer side is the, as we were talking about before, the lack of applications available to consumers, and BlackBerry, it sounds like they're trying to correct that on their enterprise side by making it easy for their business customers to run their business apps on BlackBerry. Of course, that's just scratching.
Oh, okay,
the surface of what BlackBerry's problems are. And Jake talked to a lot of former BlackBerry customers who said that this is not enough to get them back in the fold.
And is that so that like that development app dev stuff part of it, is that for BB10 apps or is that for iOS and Android apps as well?
I'm not 100% sure. It doesn't specifically mention iOS and Android, but it says other operating systems. So, here we go. Yeah, because Windows Phone, older BlackBerry, iOS, and Android.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting because so the app dev angle, you know, especially for CA and for FiberLink, now that FiberLink is, you know, part of IBM, IBM has that whole big mobile first initiative. So they're telling, you know, they're both telling, you know, very, you know, very strong, you know, app development stories, you know, with CA, with, they're saying use our layer 7 API management tools and our other DevOps tools, and IBM has, you know, a bunch of stuff as well. So that's
and
been
don't get SAP when you're talking about that too.
Yeah, exactly. So
I mean, that's definitely something that we're going to need to start paying more attention to in the EMM market is, you know, making now that we've pretty much got the basics of managing devices down and we're starting to, you know, at least gain mind share in terms of what application management is and how it works and why you need it. You know, application management is very limited unless you have those applications available to manage. And that's been a struggle for a lot of companies to get their legacy apps or apps that are running on one platform ported over to the variety of different mobile operating systems that their users have either corporate issued or that they bring in themselves. So, you know, platforms that make it easier for companies to bring their apps to the mobile era without going out and hiring a full, you know, iOS development team, which can be very, very expensive, is something that's going to provide a lot of value when customers get to that point.
Yeah. And so can we say that for EMM 2014 is going to be the year of like we talk a lot more about apps?
I think that's fair to say. Either the management of the apps or the development of the apps for for various systems, yeah, I think that's going to dominate a lot of the conversation because, you know, if you just bring if I bring my iPhone into work, you know, it has the native email app on there and I can figure out how to check my email. And if there's a couple of company sanctioned cloud services that we use for various things, like our expense management system is Concur. Concur has an app. I use that on my phone. But aside from that, we have all these proprietary apps that I can't run on my phone. And
all of the whole back end of right, yeah, right. CMA 7.
I couldn't write a story and post it from my phone or my iPad. I would need a PC hooked up to our VPN and all that stuff. So, you know, crossing that barrier and really getting people to do productive work on proprietary corporate systems on a mobile device is the next big barrier, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I should ask some of our, some of our sales guys what it's like when they open up Sales Logix on an iPad.
Yeah. But at least, you know, a lot of the sales apps are cloud-based and do have mobile apps. I feel like that's one vertical that has made those strides a lot, you know, thanks to Salesforce kind of pushing that market along. And, you know, other industries like the content management platform industry has not been so quick.
Right, right. So the other part of BEZ 12, I think I saw this. So before with BEZ 10, BEZ 10 did all of the, like the iOS and Android management and the new stuff, but then you used BEZ 5 as a connector to manage your legacy BB 7 devices. And so this merges that all together into one box now, right?
Right, which is maybe where they came up with the name, because 10 plus 5 is... No.
They
called it BEZ 15, that would make a little more sense, but...
I have a call with them coming up later this week, so I will ask them that.
All right, yeah. Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. So
you can add a list of scoops.
Yeah. So in other news, so like sort of the usual suspects. Actually, before I get to the usual suspects of EMM, one last thing I want to mention. So Intel was there, and Intel was showing off their very creatively named Intel Device Protection Technology. And so I have a video of this.
So that's probably that,
what's that?
So what does their device protection technology do?
Okay, so I have a video of this that's going to go up later this week. And so this is right now I'm working off of my memory from recording the video on Thursday afternoon at a show. But essentially, so Intel on Android, Intel on Android, you know, like the other, you know, Android vendors, they have their set of management extensions that go on top of basic Android. So if one of these partner vendors makes a device, you know, they can open up these APIs to have extra management features for the device, much like Samsung or HTC or Motorola have their extra management APIs. AirWatch and Citrix, I believe, announced support for this, and I think there are new devices coming out or expected to be announced soon. The other part of it is that, you know, since they're down there at the chip level doing all the, you know, cool stuff that Intel has been doing at the chip level for years, McAfee Endpoint Protection, anti-malware and antivirus product, what it can do is, you know, because they have lower level hardware access, they can scan downloaded apps before they're installed on a device, and they can, instead of scanning the whole device, you know, all the files on a new device, they can just do delta scans, and that's all enabled on these Intel chip based Android devices. So I think that's, you know, pretty cool, because people are always wondering what Intel is up to, and certainly it's a unique value proposition for like these enterprise Android tablets or these, you know, tablets that are replacing, you know, what formerly would have been some sort of embedded Windows device or, you know, those types of things. And also the people talk about the other advantage of, you know, if you have Dell providing your, you know, your enterprise tablets or something, you know, since Dell wants to make this friendly to the enterprise, they're not going to, you know, change the shape of the case and make all your, you know, barcode scanner accessories, you know, useless after just a year and things like that.
Right. And it's really interesting that, you know, just looking at what Intel is doing and then some of the stuff we were talking about before, managing and securing mobile devices is something that goes from, you know, the most minuscule hardware level to the broadest, far-reaching software level on the device and on the back end in your data center. So it's really incredible to see just kind of how wide the implications of mobility go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so now going through sort of, so those were I feel some of the big high points. Going through the usual suspects of EMM vendors, AirWatch was there. They had their big, you know, sort of embedded on-site conference. You know, they have their AirWatch Connect conference, and this show was so big that their AirWatch Connect conference, it was probably a, you know, 5,000 square foot booth within like the 70,000 foot square foot expo hall. So that was pretty crazy. Nothing too big from them there, except for the VMware deal did finally close through, and you know a few minor things with, you know, AirWatch 7.1 coming out. And then, interestingly enough, Mobile Iron was absent there, although there were a few Mobile Iron people there, and I got a chance to catch up with Ojas Riga there. And you know, one of the things that's been going around recently is that Mobile Iron announced that they had $100 million in revenue last year, which, you know, a lot of people have been comparing that to, I think, you'll have to help me out here, like somewhere like VMware said that they expected to get like $75 million worth of revenue this year because of the AirWatch acquisition. Not exactly sure how that was.
I can't remember the exact numbers either, and I don't want to say something and have it be the wrong number, but yeah, I mean, I feel like they're relatively close, Mobile Iron and AirWatch, in terms of the business they do.
Yeah. Well, and then there were also, you know, rumors or suspicion floating around the industry that the AirWatch was, you know, looking at their run rate with 1,600 employees, you know, and what people were assuming their revenue to be, they were, you know, there was some talk floating around that AirWatch, you know, may have just been, you know, half a year or so away from running out of money.
Hmm. Well, so, it's hard. You know, I mean, I forget, you know, even, you know, companies like AirWatch and Mobile Iron, who we view as two of the bigger players in the market before all this consolidation happens, you know, they're not selling to, you know, tens of that. You know, it's not, mobility is not something that every company has invested in yet. So even if you're a market leader, you're it's not like leading a market like a, you know, virtualization or something like that, where everybody's doing it. It's still a growing market, and just because you're relatively a big fish in a relatively small pond, doesn't guarantee you're going to be
doesn't guarantee for your revenue.
Right.
Yeah. So it should make for an interesting VM world this year. I know it's still like 8 months away, but we'll see how they put the story together.
You know, last year we made a big deal about how the day two keynote is usually all about end user computing, and it was not about end user computing at all at the last VMworld. But, you know, after spending more than $1 billion to acquire a mobility management company.
I'm sure they're going to want to talk about it.
I would think that they would make that front and center.
Yeah.
Come August.
Yeah. So moving on. So FiberLink, of course, was there within the EMM booth. Their announcement for the show was they announced FiberLink Maz 360 on-premise version. And of course, they're working lots of integrations with IBM Mobile First. Also, they had some news about updated file syncing, document editing options. Their mobile app management stuff can now be deployed as a standalone container on unmanaged devices. Not to mention, the guys told me that for IBM's internal mobile device management employment, about a month ago, they had just switched over to start using FiberLink. And of course, being part of an IBM just gives them access to a ton of huge enterprise potential customers. So that was FiberLink.
And I know it's not on our list, but I also wanted to mention what Microsoft did on the tablet and PC side at Mobile World Congress. They're listening to customer feedback about the usability of Windows 8.1 in terms of using it as a traditional desktop with a mouse and keyboard, and they're making some adjustments to the latest update, which will be out this spring, to make it a little more friendly for a traditional keyboard and mouse setup and not so focused on the touch features, and moving some other things around back into their traditional hiding places within Windows so that you don't have to go searching to the moon and back for things like changing your power settings or something like that.
Yeah. So the question is, so have you come across in your travels, have you come across anybody that's, I know there have been a lot of, exploratory, looking at it and, maybe some POCs, but I haven't really come across any companies that really have any major plans to move off of Windows 7 anytime soon. So out there in Boston, I don't know, have you come across any in the wild or anybody that's talking about big plans?
No, not a ton. We just did a whole project on Surge Enterprise Desktop, focusing on the last few months of XP, where there's still, I'm looking at a story we ran on Surge Enterprise Desktop that has some adoption numbers, and it says Windows 7 has 47.5% market share, 8 and 8.1 combined are only 10.6, and XP is still at 29.2. So, forget about moving off Windows 7 anytime soon. There's a decent chunk of users who haven't even moved off XP to 7 yet. So I don't think the move to 8 is anywhere on the horizon for a good chunk of those people.
So are they going to have a big countdown timer like on the sidebar at Search Enterprise Desktop? Oh, we should do that for BrianMadden.com. Justin, make a note to ask Brian and Gabe about putting a countdown timer widget. Yeah. So other people at the show I talked to, Symantec was there. Most recently they've officially launched their Symantec Sealed program, their mobile app management partner program in January. And in January, they also launched the business version of Norton Zone. So that's their file sync product for that syncing to on-premise sources of files is still pending, though. There was also Globo. I don't know, Colin, have you come across Globo? So, of course, they did the mobile app management stuff and acquired Notify about a year ago.
I feel like I've seen their press releases come through my Outlook, but I haven't done anything with them.
Yeah. So they're looking to you know, start making waves now that they're you know, they're in the process of bringing those two products together to have their EMM, you know, their EMM suite complete. They also announced, you know, an app transformation, or, you know, like codeless app development. Again, I'm making air quotes as I say that. product called Globo App Zone. I would have loved to get a demo of that on video, but unfortunately that just didn't work out time-wise. Also, the show, as I mentioned, I talked to the folks at Cellrox, and, you know, because Cellrox was one of the first Android dual persona phones that I actually got my hands on to test last fall, and their technology they announced is in the Yota phone. That's Yota, not you know, not like the Star Wars Yoda, which that phone is known
in
for
the phone
having.
Is.
Right. That phone is known for having two screens, so it's there.
Which seems like a good place for it if you're going to have two screens. Might as well.
have them
in separate containers, anyways, or separate OSs.
Yeah. And you know, they also mentioned they have, you know, they have a few clients, you know, at you know, very high security, you know, financial and, you know, that type of stuff, that, you know, while Cellrox isn't, you know, available on any devices in the US yet, they have a few clients that they buy Nexus 5s and Nexus 7 devices and put the Cellrox on there and use that way. So overall, as we come to the end of the hour, Mobile World Congress, what do you say? Back again next year?
Yes, I hope to actually make it next year, and definitely just following it from afar. It definitely seems like something worth covering and keeping on our calendar. So I'm sure I would have an even more favorable review of it, getting to experience everything in person. But obviously, all the big players are there. Lots of good people to talk to, and seems like a good use of our time.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the next time as well. So lots to go through. Well, thank you for everybody today for listening. You know, we'll have this posted on the website, of course. And if I may, I'll plug a few things coming up. This week is our first Enterprise Mobility Management Roadshow in Toronto, and next week I'll be heading over to Boston. We'll be at the Virtualization Group Boston show there. So really looking forward to that and catching up with my East Coast colleagues.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be good to see you in the office, and I can give you a tour of our lovely podcast studio.
Great. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Colin, as always, it was a pleasure.
Good catching up with you, Jack, and I will talk to you and see you soon.
Great.